I'm Kyone Wolf, star of Doesn't That Beat All, the number one radio program in America. You know, I get a lot of letters saying, Miss Wolf, what do you eat to keep sounding so perky? And where do you get that famous digestion? We can tell you're as regular as a Swiss railroad train. Well, you know what? They're absolutely right. I eat these wonderful Weston soda biscuits. And when the clock strikes one, it's time for number two. Speaking of which, can I borrow that newspaper? Now take a trip back to a time when radio was classy. Hear the story of Ivor Hughes, 65 years in the business. And now he plays Honeybee Vanderhover on Life with Artie, Colin McEnroe.
I sometimes wonder what it was like to work in radio when radio was really great and when radio had virtually no competitors whatsoever. And our guest today, he knows. He was there. He's been around for a lot of the history of radio. He's a very familiar name to a lot of you. Tomorrow will be his last day on the radio. I don't think anybody likes that idea very much, except maybe him. And his name is Ivor Hugh. First of all, welcome to the studios of WNPR. You've been in most of the radio studios around Hartford, including this one before, right?
Oh, yes, number of times. Delighted to be here.
So you, let's go back in time. Right? You know, it's so funny because if you look out the window of my office, which is one room over from where we're sitting,
yes,
you can look at the current headquarters of WCCC. They're right next door to us, and every so often we can see some young man in a black AC/DC t-shirt come out on the fire escape and smoke a cigarette or something like that. But it's a long way from the WC. You must have been at CCC in 47, yeah, right when it started. Were you there,
yes,
the first day?
I was there about maybe the fourth day I was there. And, of course, it was owned by Bill Savitt.
Mm-hmm. Bill and Max Savitt.
Bill and Max, yeah, that's right. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, we began the first broadcasting on South Hickory Lane, behind the Armory. That's where the transmitter was, way back.
So I thought from day one it was in the basement of the Bond Hotel.
Well, I think we had to wait a couple of days to get it open. Yes, we were then situated in the basement, or Bill called it, the lower street floor of the Hotel Bond.
So just to paint a picture for people here, first of all, Bill Savitt, if you just moved to Hartford, Bill Savitt was a jeweler. See Savitt and you'll have it. Peace of mind guaranteed. POMG.
35 seconds from Main.
That's right. 35 Asylum Street, just seconds west of Main. We all grew up with these things imprinted in our heads. It's like a Manchurian Candidate or something.
Exactly.
And so, but really your studios were in this beautiful downtown hotel, the Bond Hotel. And
yes.
You had like a grand piano in the studios, right?
Yes, we did. We had a grand piano, and I think Rogers, last name, the old owner of the Bond, was still there, mm-hmm, was living, and he had spats on. I remember him wearing spats. And I remember the fact that the joy of working at that particular place, Colin, was it? There was no other hotel. And when anyone came to stay to do a show at the Bushnell, they had to stay at the Bond.
Yeah, and this includes some pretty interesting names. We're going to get to those. But just, first of all, when you went on the air in 1947, what kind of a show were you doing? Was there music?
Yes.
Was it just you talking?
Yeah. It was a good afternoon, good music type. It was the classical music.
Mm-hmm.
I persuaded Bill twice a week to have classical music, Tuesdays and Thursdays. I think it was 1 o'clock. And I would put a show together. And I had a theme that I pulled out then, and I never have stopped using it. The Polka and Fugue from Schwander by Weidenberg.
From Schwander, the bagpiper.
Yeah. Bum, ba-da-dum, da-da-dum.
Yeah, no, that's actually a pretty famous, although that's like the only, he's the ultimate one-hit wonder. He's a bigger one-hit wonder. Ivor's son, Grayson, is sitting in the studio here with us, so I'm going to go to Grayson's generation. He was a bigger one-hit wonder than Zagar and Evans or any of the one-hit wonders, right? Because he wrote that one opera.
That's it.
He's done.
That's right.
So let's hear a little of that theme right now. We'll play a little of that. So you're playing a classical music show in this beautiful studio in this lovely downtown hotel. And as you said, it was the kind of hotel where everybody stayed.
Yes, that's correct.
Which meant that if they were staying there, you had a pretty good chance to get them on the show, right?
Yes, we had them on the show. Guess what the name was? The Blue Room.
The Blue Room? And what was the Blue Room? That was a talk show?
Talk show, yeah.
Yeah. So you were doing more than just the classical music show.
Yes,
you were
at that time I was doing some interviewing, and I had some delightful interviews with some of the great stars.
Well, let's run through a few. Frank Sinatra passed
Frank
through?
Sinatra.
Yeah. Was he courteous? Was he nice?
Yes, what are your memories? Nice chap. Nat King Cole, another wonderful person. Eugene Ormandy. Sir Thomas Beecham.
Rosemary Clooney, right?
Yes. Oh,
I think you had more than one kind. Oh, actually, there may be more than one Rosemary Clooney story to tell, right?
Oh, yes. Yeah. She became a very good friend of ours, JMJ, and she broke, as they said in those days, she broke a record in Hartford.
She broke a record?
Yeah. Me and my teddy bear. She broke that record.
So when you say broke the record, she debuted it?
She debuted it.
All right. Well, let's hear a little of Me and My Teddy Bear by Rosemary Clooney. I'm sure we've got that in our files.
In the house right next to mine, a little boy lives there. At Christmas time, dear Santa Claus brought him a teddy bear. He loves his little teddy bear. He's with it all day long. And the sweetest thing I've ever heard is to hear him sing this song. Me and my teddy bear have no worries, have no care. Me and my teddy bear just play and play all day.
We're talking to Ivor Hugh right now. Maybe before we get a little bit more into what it was like there at WCCC, which, by the way, stood for something, right? It's cover...
We cover Central Connecticut.
Yeah.
We cover Connecticut's capital.
It meant many things, but things like that anyway.
Bill Sabo would think up a new one every week.
How was it that you came to be here in Hartford hosting radio shows? You're from London or from England originally.
Yes, I agree. Right. That's where I was raised. But my father at that time was working for the British Ministry of War Transport, which was a very important agency. And he was sent over here to work on a project to working with a small company out of Litchfield. Mm. And it was making test equipment for radar. It was important that England had these instruments, whatever they were. And that's how we got here from London.
And at what point did you know that you wanted to do radio? How did that happen? Was CCC your first?
The reason that I was going to be a musician. I studied viola, and I was going to go back to the War College of Music. But because of the war, I wanted to get into something that was maybe helpful to the war effort. Didn't want to shoot anybody, but I was able to get into the Merchant Navy. Mm-hmm. And I was a Merchant Navy. I was a radio operator. And that changed my whole direction.
Yeah.
From wanting to play viola, I wanted to go into radio. And that's where I changed direction.
And so you just walked into Bill Savitt's office and with your lovely voice and manners persuaded him that you could host radio shows?
Yes, it took more than one visit, one, two, or three. But he was a real character. Mm. I mean, a lot of people thought that he was kind of forward, but he was a gentleman. He really was.
And he was sort of the kind of entrepreneur that cities need, too.
I mean, absolutely.
He owned a baseball team here at the Savitt Gems.
That's right, right. And he did a lot to encourage business in the area. He really did.
I also want to talk just a little bit about the technology of radio in those times. For example, you guys did, if there was a commercial that ran on CCC, it wasn't developed outside by an agency and handed to you, right? You guys made the commercial
there? We made it on a great, great big disc, a 16-inch, was it? And it was recorded from inside out. And we did the commercials right then and there.
So you recorded commercials basically onto wax.
Onto wax. Oh, yes. I never forget that wonderful smell of that wax trail of wax threads. I can smell that today. Also, I also had to use a wire recorder, mm-hmm. not a tape. I think I was in the tail end of using the wire, mm-hmm. which always pop or break, and we were stuck, and we'd have to do a whole show over again.
That might even be a hard thing for people to – I mean, I think there's a certain percentage of people who can imagine what tape was.
Yes.
Mr. Dankowski sometimes, yes. when he's teaching, will teach his students about what it was like to cut tape. But can you even sort of tell people what does wire recorder even mean?
It looked like a cassette. It had a wire in it, which I guess you somehow put the signal on it, and you put it into a little hole in this small machine and press on, and you heard that noise, and whatever you put on the wire will come out.
So you're doing this radio show in this beautiful downtown hotel.
Yes.
In the hotel, there was a penthouse with a ballroom. I think a lot of those acts that you're talking about were going to perform in that ballroom.
Could be.
Right?
Yeah. Could very well be.
There were
or the State Theater down in the other end of Hartford. But you still had to stay at the Bond.
Yeah.
Yes.
And why was that? Because my recollection or my understanding even of Hartford hotels was that there was like the Hartford Hofbräu, the Hartford Hilton. There were some other hotels, right?
But the not Bond the Hilton.
Not the Hilton. Okay.
Not at that time.
Yeah.
It was the Bond Hotel.
The Bond or nothing. All right.
Yeah, that's right. Where Paul Anderman's Orchestra play.
Yeah, I knew Paul very well, actually. So you stayed at CCC for how long? How long were you there?
I was there until, many, many years. 1961 is when I made a change and decided to get out of a commercial radio and to maybe go into public service, religious radio. And I became director of communications for the Greater Hartford Council of Churches.
Well, so before we get deep into that, I want to pause a little bit over the CCC
yes.
time, because there's a lot of a lot of other things that have to be discussed there then. One of them would be, well, also, just give us a sense even, I mean, I was lucky enough to do radio downtown in one of the, maybe the last truly downtown location at the Gold Building when TIC was there. But what the experience you must have had doing radio in a truly downtown environment, I mean, I don't know, what was downtown Hartford like in 1947, 1948?
Believe it or not, it was exciting.
Yeah, I know.
It was a retail center.
Yeah.
And Bill Savitt, of course, knew his way around and got many accounts in which I was busy working with people like Sage Allen, mm-hmm. Brown Thompson's, G. Fox, and working on shows that would maybe include Shoppers, getting them in on the air. Mm-hmm. And I had a show called Luncheon Matinee, in which I would go down to Brown Thompson's and talk to people, and they would give me their ideas about what kind of music they'd like. And then we'd interview them. I also had a junior disc jockey show.
Junior disc jockeys would be just like kids coming
kid,
in?
Kids, yeah, from the schools. And I, of course, worked with A.C. Peterson with some of my children's shows. Mm. And one of my great memories is having A.C. Peterson, Mr. Peterson, and Bill Savitt together in a program talking about their beginnings.
Huh.
Each one trying to outdo each other. You think you had it tough? Yeah. I got up at 5 to milk the cows, and people say, what did I? That's nothing. I got up at 3 to open my jewelry store. Delightful people
yeah.
who are really into their community and into their work.
And, you know, the other thing to sort of pause over here, I think, also, is the fact that radio these days, commercial radio, means you have a format.
Yes.
You play the songs within the format.
Yes.
The shows don't change that much over the course
Absolutely.
Of the day. A different host comes in, but it's basically the same music over and over and over again.
And you got to pretty well stick to that music sheet that has been chosen for you.
But my sense of WCCC in 1947, 1952, 1954 is all day long. It was this kind of jumble of different things.
Exactly.
Right?
That one show after another, semi-classical, classical, sports. And we began the 1290 program, 1290 Hits, in which personally maybe the word Joe Durand, who was one of our disc jockeys, would choose his own music, and he had a free hand to do it.
Yeah.
Nobody chose it for him. And most of the money coming in was from spot announcements, not big companies, but small retail. One of my good friends that I remember so well was John Levitt. Leave It to Levitt. He was a rock person.
I remember Leave It to Levitt, yeah. So did you play exclusively classical music, or did you have shows that you hosted that had big band music? Or
I did mostly classic and semi-classic.
Yeah.
Joe Durand, some other disc jockeys came in, did the other.
What we're talking about here, I guess this is another thing that I should emphasize, is that what we're talking about when we're talking about WCCC right now, from 1947 to 1960 or so, would have probably been exclusively an AM radio station, right?
Absolutely. A daytimer.
Yeah,
and we had to go off the air at sundown.
It's just amazing stuff. Well, now, at some point in there, and I'm assuming this is in your WCCC years, you developed a character named Leroy the Duck. Was Leroy the Duck on the radio?
Yes, he was.
Yeah. Explain Leroy the Duck.
Well, he was a little duck. I don't do it very well now, but I was able to quack like a duck. And he could understand English. and he developed into a real character. And because of him, we developed some other characters. And they became part of Big Brother Bill and Leroy. And Big Brother Bill became very popular with children. And many years ago, we started the Hartford Current Children's Camp. Special shows in which, again, Rosemary Clooney was a very important.
Well, I want to talk about this. This is interesting. I know a little bit of the legend of this, partly because when I came to the Hartford Current, the managing editor there was Irving Kravtsow, and I think Irving Kravtsow had somehow or other been involved in maybe writing material for Leroy the Duck or covering the exploits of Leroy the Duck or something. But I want to sort of make this clear to people. So this would have been a specific show you were doing on CCC.
Yeah.
Was it a Saturday morning show or a daily afternoon show?
It was a daily morning show during the week, Monday at 8 o'clock. I was in direct competition with Bob Steele.
Yeah, Bob Steele would have come along right around that same time.
We had a delightful time talking about that together many, many times. I think once or twice, our ratings were just a little bit bigger than Bob's because the kids.
Because of Leroy, probably.
Yeah, because of Leroy.
So 8 a.m. weekday mornings, you're on the air with Leroy the Duck.
Yeah.
And this became a phenomenon. I mean, Leroy the Duck. I was born in 54, so I may have missed Leroy the Duck entirely. Yeah. But my sense is this was a big phenomenon, right?
Yes, it was. Yeah. It was. I didn't expect that to be so popular. I don't think Bill Savage did. But when he saw it was, hey, there's something good here.
And so you would talk like yourself to Leroy the Duck, and he would quack back at you.
And
you would have conversations with him?
Yes, that's right. And I had conversations with Beverly the Beaver, a lovely young lady who just loved to make funny things. I used to love skunk cabbage pie, and the children loved her recipes. And there was a Curtis, a crocodile. Bill never really realized that it sounded just like Bill Savage. But he was a great, grand, and glorious crocodile. And I developed.
So there's all these animals. We should say, for those of you just tuning in and thinking that I've lost my mind here. We're talking to Ivor Hugh, and he's doing some
of these. I definitely have lost my mind.
Yeah, so, we may have all lost our minds. Ivor Hugh's doing some of these characters that he did on radio in Hartford in the late 40s, early 50s. This is the WCCC, which was born in 1947. He was part of its very first days. And the other thing that I'd heard is that there would be these birthday parties for Leroy the Duck, like at the Bushnell or something?
Yes, always at the Bushnell, yes.
And so once a year there'd be a birthday party for Leroy the Duck?
Yes, that's right.
And they would like pack the Bushnell, right?
Pack the Bushnell, and all the stars of radio would come, and who made new recordings, this person and that person. And one of the big stars was Rosemary Clooney.
Yeah, Rosemary. That's somebody had told me that Rosemary Clooney came and she sang "Happy Birthday" to Leroy. And,
yes,
and,
right. Had so, a lot of, and sang for the first time "Me and My Teddy Bear."
Oh, that's where that happened. Okay,
yeah,
on
yeah.
a Leroy the Duck
yeah,
birthday party.
Yeah.
So I think the other thing that's hard for people to picture is, I mean, if you've grown up in the age of television, how powerful radio was in 1947. I mean, there were no competitors, right?
This was it. Yeah. To me. I've always thought this, Colin, that radio is a tremendously powerful communication tool. Mm-hmm. When you are in the car and no one else, and you're talking, the radio's there, that's a very personal piece of communication. And nothing else can take that away from you. And the nice thing about the radio is that you're making up your own pictures.
Yes.
In your own mind. And it's uniquely yours. Every child had a picture of what Leroy looked like. To some, he was a big yellow duck. To others, my duck was a small little cuddly creature. And when they heard these different sounds of Beverly the Beaver and Curtis the Crocodile, every child had their own pictures of their own imagination at work. And what a gift.
Yeah, the term they use sometimes these days is theater of the mind.
Yes.
You know, that you yeah. outside, you do create that for people, and then they populate
yes,
that theater
right.
in their own
yeah.
heads. But there was, I mean, even though every child had his or her own mental picture of Leroy, my other understanding is that Leroy did, he was made physical at least for these birthdays. Was there like a
yes,
blow were, up
I
Leroy?
Yes, I had a person make me Leroy.
Yeah.
My Leroy. and he could open his mouth and talk. And children never questioned the fact that I had him under my arm and sometimes my mouth would move when he did. What has nothing to do with the fact that he was a duck and they loved him.
Yeah. You're listening to a conversation we recorded on Monday with radio personality Ivor Hughes. So don't call in because we won't be able to take your call, even if you have acute memories of the Bond Hotel. His last show is tomorrow, Friday. We'll be back on this show with much, much more.
Just play and play.
So we're talking to Ivor Hugh about some of the early days of radio and the early days of broadcasting here in Hartford. So you, I think you overlapped with CCC when it added FM, right? I mean,
correct.
AM was the thing.
Yes.
Nobody cared about FM. FM was this completely ridiculous, weird thing that people were trying out and maybe
right,
would catch
exactly.
on someday.
One day. And WCCC FM became, for about, I would say, 6 or 7 months, the New England Center for WQXR network. And the shows from QXR, the Times, I gather, with classic stuff, will be sent through WJMJ's transmitter. The transmitter of JMJ's, of CCC's FM was on the mountain, Avon Mountain, on the top. And I don't think that lasted too long because at this time, I'm talking about the 50s and maybe the beginning of the 60s, Bill Savitt had to face the fact that rock and roll was going to stay.
Yeah.
And he just did not like that. Oh, he tried everything. I remember he told me one day to play nothing but Mantovani for 2 days.
Well, you were doing some classical music radio for CCC. Was HCN also a classical station for a while?
Yes, yeah. I did. I used to do the Hartford Symphony narrations at the Bushnell.
So you'd sort of do a live symphony concert?
Yes.
Yeah.
I would be announce the.
And I think I read somewhere that at least on one occasion the symphony started half an hour late and you had to sort of vamp for that.
Vamp for a half hour, yes. We used to take the whole picture of the concerts was under the direction of Colt. He had a huge record collection, the Colt of the Colt Firearms. Yeah. I don't know which one it was.
Some descendant of
Senate. Yeah. He was the engineer who was behind the broadcasts of the Hartford Symphony.
So then CCC-FM, it goes on the air, I think in 1960, and joins that QXR network.
Yeah, for, yeah.
Which I think might have been owned by the New York Times, right?
Yes,
something
that's right.
Like that. Yeah. So CCC-FM goes on the air. And did people get it? Did they listen to FM? Did they have – I mean, did they even have FM receivers in their cars?
Well,
they probably
they
didn't,
did.
Right?
Yeah. Well, very, very, very few.
Yeah.
And I – at that point in my career, I decided that I was, going to go into the conference of churches and do their radio communications. So I wasn't there that long to see this and the – FM actually established itself.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there's no doubt when they finally got it, it just grew like topsy.
Yeah.
And it was so popular. It's kind of ironic today that WCCC AM is now a classical outlet. Well, I don't understand that, but that's the way.
What goes around comes around.
What comes around, right, right.
So we're skipping over another big thing here, which is Flippy the Clown.
Oh, yeah.
Now, explain Flippy the Clown.
Well, Flippy the Clown grew out of the fact that Big Brother Bill and Leroy was doing so well. I had a call one day from J. Walter Thompson, and they would you like to come down and I'd like to discuss a radio show that we're working on for your area. And I said, a radio show? He said, yes, but actually what we really want to know is to see if we can get a television show going on the ABC channel in New Haven, which was, I think, 6 then. Then it became 8. I said, I have this radio. Well, come down and speak with us. So I went down there, and they asked me if I could develop a clown character and be on the air twice a week, Tuesdays and Thursdays, and the J. Walter Thompson would supply the commercials, and it was Ward Baking Company.
Mm-hmm.
I said, well, I've never been a clown. So there are all these people in their business who say, well, what? Just give us an example. Literally, just.
So in other words, you're just sitting there in a room in New York.
Yes.
With the biggest advertising agency in America at that moment, J. Walter Thompson.
Yeah.
They've got this vision of a children's TV show of some kind that's going to run in your market.
Right.
And the reason that they want to put it on is because they've already got the sponsor.
That's right.
Back in the days where that was not that uncommon.
That's right. Sort of
GE or somebody would.
And they looked at me because I had good ratings as far as Leroy.
You had good ratings. You had a duck.
Yeah,
you know. And just to further set the stage here, so really what you are is a former violist who had gotten interested in radio through the Merchant Marine. Now had done mainly classical radio, had been sort of able to, you know, be there in the golden age of radio when it's all there there was. You just happen to have introduced a duck at some point, and now they want you to be a clown. And right there on the spot in the room, they said, let's see your clown. Let's see you be a clown.
So did Colin, exactly. You did it beautifully. That's what happened.
Yeah.
And I must have done something correct because they said, all right, let's give it a chance.
Do you remember what it is that you did? I mean, did you say something? Did you go?
I had Leroy the Duck sing.
Okay.
I think he sang You Make Me Feel So Young as Sinatra.
You make me feel like spring is spring.
You got it. It must have affected them in some way, but they
how could it not have?
And the result was we had Flippy the Clown on Channel 8 on Tuesdays and Thursdays in the afternoon. And
roughly what year are we in here?
I would say
somewhere in the 50s, right?
Yes, really, really. I would say around 58, 59. So
we're still pretty early in the history of television programming children's programming for television. This is kind of a new thing.
Yeah,
you know?
brand new, yeah.
Yeah, and just for younger listeners, just to sort of set it was a not uncommon phenomenon by the time, I was born in 54, so, you know, around 60, 61, 62. It was typical that there'd be shows in the afternoon, afternoon.
Yes.
It was to get the kids to shut up and not bother mom while she's making dinner.
Full of cartoons.
Yeah, there'd be lots of cartoons, and there'd be some kind of host who would either be a clown or a sea captain or
something like that. That was the pattern. And I guess Flippy fits into that pattern. and it was quite successful. And children, we were involved with kids with pictures, and they'd send me their pictures, and they would send me their songs that they've written. And they would, of course, by that time, I had also given birth to this, not only the voices of people like Beverly the Beaver, and I also had puppet characters.
Yeah.
So I became a puppeteer.
Yeah.
And we got to learn what Curtis the Crocodile looked like and Beverly the Beaver.
So some of these characters made the transition from radio to television.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
But you'd never been a clown before. I mean, I don't know. What's it like putting on clown makeup? Was it strange? Well, was it scary?
Well, my kids have always been part of my shows. We developed with the help of Walter Powers, which was a company that did Watch Mr. Wizard. Remember that?
Yeah, I remember Mr. Wizard.
Yeah, well, the producer was Powers, and he was assigned, or his company was assigned, to develop the Flippy costume. Big feet, a big nose, painted big mouth, but not a scary mouth and not a scary nose. And I think my people liked Flippy because he wanted to do so much, quite often failed at almost everything, but he had an enthusiasm for what he did. And the kids just liked that.
So that was Flippy's persona, was that he was an enthusiastic flop. He would try things and they wouldn't work all that well.
Yeah, yeah. But he would go and do something next. Yeah. And another example or another program next week. Another try at something.
Was there any part of you that was saying to yourself, you know, I went to the Royal College of Music in London. You know, I should be introducing a Victor Herbert melody right now. I don't want to be a clown on TV. Or was it just really fun?
And it was fun.
Yeah.
It was fun. I have a feeling that when you are doing something, when you are doing it and you feel happy in your heart that you're doing it, it's good.
Yeah.
And when I saw the reaction of the children, that makes you feel so good that they're having fun. And the joy of their inclusion was the most important to me, and that it always has been. And today, Colin, it's amazing. I've been going down the street, and someone was saying, did you have a radio show? It's because they heard me talk. You know? Mm-hmm. I said, yeah. I used to love, you know, they'd tell me how they liked Leroy and how they liked the adventures that they would get into. That, to me, is terribly important.
I would also think, though, that there's also a learning process, a learning curve about how to do children's television, too,
which is
something that you hadn't really done anything like that before.
No.
I mean, CCC in the golden age of radio, there was a lot of programming for children. And as we covered Leroy the Duck. But my understanding is back in those days, you know, people would do things like send in where the Christmas presents were so the announcers would come on the air on Christmas morning and tell this particular little kid where his present was hiding or something. There's a lot of that kind of stuff. But I think I read somewhere that at least on one occasion you were doing something as Flippy and he was like trapped in a cardboard thing or something. Tell that story.
I did a show in which Flippy was doing some magic and someone had made, for promotional purposes, a stand-up figure of mine. So I was the same life-size figure. And I took this magic pill, and all of a sudden, I couldn't move. I was changed into this piece of wood, and I couldn't move. And I made a mistake, and that I left the show. They're saying,
that was a cliffhanger?
Yeah, exactly. And I thought it was funny. I got to find my way out of this cardboard, this piece of wood that I'll do it tomorrow. When you come back next time, friends, boys and girls, we're going to figure out what to do. Goodbye. And I had a call from a mother who said, I'm at my home, please forgive me, she says, for calling you. But in your show today, you were turned into a wooden-cardboard figure. And it just bothered my little daughter. She can't go to sleep. She's so worried that you're not going to be all right. And I just felt so bad that I didn't think about that. Mm-hmm. I just thought it was a funny ha-ha thing to do. But a little child, one child, was worried. And I said to myself, remember this. You got to remember that you are dealing with the imagination, the wonderful imaginations of children, and you can't do anything that would mar their enjoyment. And I remember that. But it really struck me as how powerful radio can be. How powerful can one's imagination be? And you are in charge of creating the pictures that they are imagining. So be careful of the pictures you create.
Right, exactly. Now, how long were you on television as a clown?
Oh, my goodness.
Many years?
I would say about 10. Because I moved from Channel 8. Then I moved to Channel 18.
18, yeah.
And then to 30. And by that time, when I got to 30, Cliffy was getting a little less active. And I was doing more work with the puppets by themselves and my wife, Beth, who both of us developed a program called The Friendly Forest, which was sponsored by one of the churches that I worked for, the Unity Church.
Well, the other thing to remember about all this, too, I think for it's difficult for people of a certain age to visualize or to imagine, is there weren't a lot of choices back then for what you were going to watch. So that, I mean, not only was there not cable, but TV stations didn't even come in all that well. So,
absolutely.
So there was, for a lot of people, Flippy might be, you know, you might have a couple of choices in the afternoon,
yeah,
depending on whether you wiggle the antenna the right way.
Well,
so,
exactly. So, absolutely. You had to wiggle the antenna. And what I found out, too, was that many times the kids would go down, get the station on by themselves. Let's say I had it was a show on a Sunday morning. The parents never saw it. The kids did.
Yeah.
They were happy to, the parents were happy to sleep an extra hour. And so I had the responsibility through the show to be with those children.
Mm-hmm.
And I was really conscious of that. So that always affected me, because many times people, even today, will come and say, hey, you had that Friendly Forest show. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I remember that as a kid, getting up early in the morning and seeing it. How's Leroy? How's Curtis?
You're listening to a conversation we recorded on Monday with Ivor Hugh. His final show is going to be tomorrow, Friday. So don't call in today, because it's a recorded show. We won't be able to take your call. And if your parents are sleeping, wake them up. There's one more segment to go. They won't want to miss it.
Enjoying this trip into radio's golden age, keep the spirit going tonight at 7:30 with Katie Talarski's Radio Adventure Theater, a blend of live performances and radio. It takes the stage tonight at Real Artways in Hartford. Today's show was produced by Patrick Scahill, Betsy Kaplan, and me, with help from our intern Kristen Doerr. The part of Bill Curry was played by Arthur Godfrey. On tomorrow's show, The Nose says hello, Prince George, and goodbye, Mr. Wiener. And now, back to Colin.
We're talking to Ivor Hugh right now. He is an embodiment of the history of broadcasting here in Connecticut. He was on, virtually on the first day of WCCC in 1947. Over the years, he was on the early version of HCN and CCC's early days on FM, and as you're hearing now, also in some of the early days of local television programming in Connecticut as Flippy the Clown. One of the reasons he's on today is that tomorrow will be his last day, you think, anyway.
Oh, I'm quite sure, yes.
All done, all right.
I've been 30 years is a long time to be on a show.
30 years, and we have to talk about this show that's 30 years. Although what we're really talking about is, I think, if I'm doing my math right, we're really talking about something close to 65 years total of broadcasting.
Yes, that's right. Broadcasting, yeah. Totally. I think you're right, Colin. My Lord, that's a long time. My Lord.
Well, when you start young, you can keep going a long time. So I hope it's not a rude question. How old are you today?
86.
86 years old.
86.
And so this 30-year-old show, this is Good Evening Good Music that we're talking about, good, right?
That's right. It was a program put on by WJMJ, which opened 1957, I think, Christmas Eve.
So we should explain, WJMJ is the Archdiocesan radio station
Correct.
Of the Roman Catholic Church
right,
here
exactly.
in Connecticut.
Right. It was born out of the efforts of Archbishop Whalen, mm-hmm. who wanted to have an ecumenical voice and bring churches together. He was amazing, a man of all seasons.
Yeah. And he actually came to you, he recruited you for this,
yes,
right?
Yes, he
yeah.
did, because he knew that at that time, as I mentioned a couple of times, I was working for the Conference of Churches, doing radio and television work for many of the Protestant denominations, Jewish congregations, Orthodox, and he said, would you help us get these programs together so we could all be together on one station. Mm-hmm. The manager of WJMJ then was John Ellinger, mm-hmm. who was one of the leading lights in WRCH's development as a radio station.
So Good Evening Good Music is, I mean, one of the things that sort of threads through your career is for decades there were attempts to have classical music on the radio. And it was
yes.
an easy thing to do probably in 1947. It was a natural thing in 1947 to be playing
yes.
classical or semi-classical music
yes.
on the air. This became a harder and harder thing, and there were other stabs at doing it. People will find this hard to believe, but WTIC-FM was for a while a classical
yes.
music station.
Yes.
But really, apart from obviously the studios we're sitting in right here, or at least the station that we're on the air with right now on WNPR, for a long time, really one of the places classical music has gone to live here in this area is on WJMJ and on your show, right?
Yes, that's correct. And for many years, I was on the 44 hours a day, every day in the week.
Wow.
And that's a lot of time. One of the joys of this, Connor, is that I introduced people to so many new selections. When I say new, I don't mean real new music, but new areas of music. I discovered Scandinavian classical music. People like Berwald and people who gave us beautiful music like Edvard Grieg.
Edvard Grieg, I was thinking.
Yeah,
Do you have a favorite Grieg composition?
Yes. Yeah. I think my kids liked it, especially my son Grayson, In the Hall of the Mountain King.
In the Hall of the Mountain King. Well, let's play a little of that here, too. I mean, well, you know, we've got Ivor Hugh on. Let's play a little Grieg. And so we actually are with this time is flying by here, but I want to make sure we sort of cover everything. So Good Evening, Good Music. And talk about some of the other kinds of music that you were happy to have introduced or enlarged people's understanding of.
Baroque, the nice crisp sound of the Baroque period that always reminded me of eating a piece of celery. Nice crisp music, music of Vivaldi, music of Boccherini, music of Edward Fresh, and some other people that were not known at that. What I say not known is a temptation to play Bach, Mozart, Haydn, but I'd like to go. I went far afield, I think, a little bit to introduce people. Also to Irish music, John Field.
Oh, yeah.
The man who really beat Chopin with the lovely nocturnes that he wrote. Beautiful music. And I was also amazed, Colin, that when I would play one night a week, it was always Broadway music. And I was playing some music by one of America's great melodists, Jerome Kern. I got a call from a young man who in his high school, I forgot what high school he was, didn't mention where he's, I didn't know about Jerome Kern. Mm. I said, how could you be a young American not knowing about this joy, this great music that's available here? And another thing has then happened, of course, Colin, as rock got more important, we found ourselves listening to pieces of music that were very short, very exciting, let's say, but then forgotten. Mm. I mean, nothing stood the test of time, which I think is a test of good music.
Well, now, sitting here and holding his peace, and he will continue to hold his peace, is your son, Grayson Hugh. Now, people who are fans of Grayson Hugh don't need to be told anything about him. And people who listen to this show know that on Fridays at the end of the show, we always play a song that Grayson wrote for us. But Grayson, for many, many years, I mean, since I was a teenager, I've been listening to Grayson Hugh and some of the bands that he had and as a solo artist. And rock is such a broad category, but, he plays in some kind of genre that would include rock music. So here you are, this standard holder of the long form classical music, and this here's rock and roll eroding our attention spans and making it impossible for us to listen to anything that's longer than 4 minutes and 12 seconds. Mm-hmm. But I see you at a lot of Grayson Hugh shows. You're beaming with pride.
Right? Because one thing that Grayson's music does, it has a quality that does span the test of time. Something he wrote in his first CD, you can listen to today and appreciate, even though it's maybe 5, 6, 7 years old. Grayson, when I listen to his music, it just isn't something to make money with. It's a thought process that he continues on from the beginning to end, as any other classical composer would do.
But when Grayson was a kid playing Wilson Pickett really loud around the house, how did you handle that? Turn that off!
No, just let him do it. Because I figured, what the heck? That's a training. He's training his ear. Mm-hmm. I had every confidence that his music, he would find of his own voice, which he did. One of the things that Bray and I often speak about is the fact that many of the good, the selections that we hear, you hear it once and that's it. It comes in one ear and really out the other. Grayson stuff, it goes in and it doesn't go out the other ear. It is processed through thinking. And
that's a proud father. Although I completely agree with you, I'm Grayson's biggest fan. But all right, we're going to have to stop here. Although, I feel like there are other stories to tell. But I just want to, first of all, tell people once again, you've been listening to Ivor Hugh. One reason I wanted to do this show is that I know that tomorrow is his last day on WJMJ. And I feel like these stories of what radio used to be are – they're not archived very well anywhere, and I think they're incredibly important. So it's been so great just to take this trip back into radio history with you.
Oh, Colin, thank you so much for giving me the opportunity. And again, I want to thank all my listeners who were with me and have been with me since my broadcasting career began in this area. I have nothing but love and excitement and joy to have shared these wonderful musical experiences with you all. Thank you so much.
All right. Well, from the Royal College of Music to the Merchant Marine to Morse code to the early days of WCCC to a duck to a clown to a 30-year classical music program. What a great story. What a great story of radio in America. And so, Ivor Hugh, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Running across a meadow, picking up lots of forget-me-nots. You make me feel so young. You make me feel there are songs to be sung, bells to be rung, wonderful fling to be flung. And even when I'm old and gray, I'm gonna feel the way I do today. 'Cause you make me feel so young. You make me feel so young. You make me feel so young. Ooh, you make me feel so young.
I'm Kyone Wolf. On behalf of everybody here at Connecticut Public Broadcasting, we'd like to say thank you to Ivor Hugh. Mr. Hugh, do you have anything else you'd like to say? And thanks to you too, Leroy the Duck.